Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. It is a Friday, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, my final Blazing Five of the year. It is a wild card weekend. There's going to be an upset, but none of you fans of favored teams want to hear that. So our final Blazing Five of the year, we're off back-to-back winning weeks. Not one of our better seasons. Great year betting college. My best ever, in fact, for college. NFL, not so much. Joy Taylor is joining me. This is one of my favorite weekends of the year where you get supposed favorites at home playing underdogs. And in the last four years of this weekend, one road team has lost by more than seven. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I think there's a possibility for a couple upsets this weekend. It's been a complete year of parity.
Look at week 18. It was nonsense.
Yeah. This is going to be
the Jags beat the Colts.
Yes. Badly.
So I want to start with this. David Culley got fired yesterday, the Houston Texans coach. And a lot of people were very upset. That leaves now one African-American head coach, Mike Tomlin, in the entire NFL year when 70% of the players are black. That's not good. That's bad. The NFL's got to do a better job. Now, here's the good news. There's great candidates this year, many African-American. But just to show you how unstable being a coach is, if I asked you right now, name an industry in America, any industry, where a high-paying job is less stable than NFL head coach. This is why Nick Saban won't go back. This is why Jim Harbaugh could make more money going back, but he's not sure. Seven coaches have been fired, and I'm going to read them off for you, and all for different reasons. There's never one reason. Brian Flores, I think he's excellent. Couldn't get along with people, I'm told. Joe Judge, completely over his head. Matt Nagy leaves with a winning record with Mitch Trubisky and Andy Dalton, but he lost the fans, he lost the media, and owners listen to that stuff. Mike Zimmer, I contend, excellent coach. But he's kind of rigid. They were trending the wrong way, and I think his voice got tired. Vic Fangio, I contend, top three defensive coach in the league. But they've got a new owner coming in, and he couldn't get the offense right. Urban Meyer, it was a bad fit. Second best college coach I've ever seen. Immature, off-field actions didn't work in the NFL. Just couldn't pivot from college to the pros. John Gruden, he's won a Super Bowl. Ugly email surface, he's fired. And then David Culley. Well, it is the weirdest ownership group in the NFL. It's the worst ownership group in the NFL. And to be fair, he was always a stopgap guy. When he got hired, he'd never been a coordinator. I was shocked. I said, this won't last long. I didn't love the hire. But it should be noted, David Culley said today, thank you, appreciate the opportunity, I loved it. And boy, did he get a good paycheck to coach for a year. His buyout was great. Would I have given David Culley another year? Yeah, even though they only won 4 of 17 games, I thought the team played hard. They beat the Chargers at the end. I mean, I think I picked them for 2 wins. All 4 wins, they were underdogs. I said this about Dan Campbell. I don't know if Dan Campbell's a good coach, but the Lions played hard and were competitive. And by and large, the Texans played hard. I would have given him a second year, though I never thought he was a long-term guy. I didn't love the Dan Campbell hire. I didn't love the David Culley hire, but who wanted this job? It was awful. But my point is, 7 different coaches, almost all of them over Joe Judge, except Joe Judge, are excellent at something. Culley's supposed to be incredibly likable. People really liked David Culley. Players played really hard for David Culley. And that is a skill, by the way. It's not all schemes. That is a skill. Outside of Joe Judge, people didn't like him. The schemes were bad. He was completely over his head. But I don't understand half these firings. Jim Harbaugh took a shipwreck in San Francisco, turned it around immediately, got to a Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick, and a year later was fired. He has a higher winning percentage than Bill Belichick. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. He was fired. Belichick was fired. Andy Reid was fired. By the way, Matt Nagy has a winning record with Andy Dalton and Mitch Trubisky. Got to two playoffs. He has a winning record. He got fired. Talk show host, columnist, fans turned on him, and ownership in Chicago listens. This is an unstable profession. The hirings are bizarre. The firings are stranger, and I don't agree with half of them. You hope race isn't part of it. You hope. But it is discouraging to have 70% black players, multiple great black candidates, and now one coach. I think David Culley deserved a second year. But I will just say this in regards holistically to the NFL. All of these come for different reasons, and half do not make sense. Half of them. Jim Harbaugh has a higher winning percentage than Bill Belichick. And he got fired right after getting to a Super Bowl with a quarterback that was okay. There we go. So I want to talk about this weekend because, you know, when you kind of get addicted to something, it doesn't even matter if it's coffee. It could be cigarettes. It could be the NFL, that you lose a sense of common sense. So this week, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 playoff games. And there's favorites, and then there's underdogs. And the underdogs are, they're on the road. These games are overwhelmingly all going to be close. People look at Philadelphia at Tampa. Well, the weather is going to be windy and cruddy in Tampa. Who does that hurt? The team that throws the ball down the field, Tampa. Outside of the Steelers, Kansas City, where I do think the Pittsburgh offense is just an unwatchable mess, that one I think the favorite wins by maybe a touchdown. But it is funny about the NFL. I think about this all the time. We keep, and I'm guilty of this too often. I shouldn't be. You're fans. Fan is short for fanatic. You have a right to sometimes go crazy because of emotions. I should know better, right? I'm the judge in this. I'm standing. I have the prosecuting attorney. I have the defense attorney. I've got the jury. I'm supposed to be the grown-up here and offer a reasonable, non-emotional opinion. But I've found there are five mistakes we make on an annual basis with the NFL, and we do it over and over, and we talk ourselves into stuff that's total nonsense. Number one, half the playoff teams this year will not make it next year. And if I suggested that to you, fans go nuts. I'm going to tell you right now, the Raiders are not going to go 6-0 in last play games and overtime games. That's not going to happen again. They probably won't make the playoffs unless they get a great coach. So number one, half of the playoff teams this weekend will not make it in. And when the media suggests it, you think we're crazy. Number two, the NFL draft, when they say it's a great quarterback draft, half stink. And when they say it's a terrible one like this year, half will be excellent. This draft this year, I'm being told none of these quarterbacks are special. I'll put it on Kenny Pickett of Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be special. Number three. Oh, that free agent signing. Kenny Golladay, Adoree Jackson for the Giants. It's going to change everything. 33% of free agent signings work. I'm just giving you the Giants as an example. Most don't. Number four is, the high-scoring team in September with no defense and the high-scoring team. Remember, teams score a lot when the weather's perfect, not as much late. The high-scoring finesse team, we always think they're going to run to the Super Bowl, outscore everybody, and then this weekend we have a playoff game where the temperature's going to be zero. Defense, running the football matter. And finally, the wild card weekend. Oh, favorites are going to win. A lot of blowouts. In the last 4 years of this weekend, we've had one blowout last year, Saints-Bears. I think Bears scored very, very late in the game to make it look closer than it was. So we keep falling for this stuff. I think it's going to be a fantastic weekend. Two of my favorite weekends of the year are March Madness the opening weekend when you've got ones facing 16s and two facing 15s. It's the IBMs facing the startups. And there's not a lot of upsets. But the games, let's be honest, are always closer than you think. And there's a handful of 12s beating 4s. The end of March Madness to me is fun, but there's not as much mystery. It's always like, you know, it's going to be Villanova and Gonzaga and Duke and Carolina and Kansas and Syracuse and all the big schools. But the opening weekend of March Madness to me is fascinating because you get just enough upsets, just enough, two or three, and a bunch of drama. And this is another weekend. I think most of the favorites will win. But you'll see in Blazing 5, I like the dogs. I think I would not pick the Kansas City-Pittsburgh game. I just took it off. I'm not taking that one. I don't want any part of it. I don't like betting huge spreads. I think they're sucker bets. But there is a reason Kansas City is favored by 12. But I will just tell you, the dogs this weekend, my picks are barking because it's overwhelmingly underdogs.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Mac Jones, we've seen it before. And you'll think this crazy, but his year is Dak Prescott. By the way, I had my reservations about Dak and Mac coming in. Both were from the SEC. They'd played plenty of big games. They were not overwhelmed initially. We were taken by the maturity of both Mac and Dak. Go look at their numbers in their rookie year. They both completed about 68% of their throws. Dak had 23 touchdowns, Mac 22. Yards per game, virtually identical. 229 to 223. Mac went on a 7-game winning streak, Dak 11. They're also both their rookie years led by a strong run game. That was really the key to the offense. And both had a very good defense their rookie year. Dallas top 5 in scoring defense. New England this year number 2. The key to both was they didn't make the big rookie mistake very much. Both were also aware of their limitations. It wasn't their arm talent or their ability to move. But with Mac and Dak, it's the coachability, the self-awareness, the maturity. There's a ceiling for both. I've never thought Mac is a very good athlete in terms of the context of NFL quarterbacks, and I think Dak is a pretty average arm talent. I have no idea if Mac Jones wins because there's no rhyme or reason to rookie quarterbacks winning their first playoff game. If you think I'm wrong, here's a list of the 6 rookie quarterbacks that have ever won a first playoff game. Sean King, Big Ben, Flacco, Mark Sanchez, TJ Yates, and Russell Wilson. 2 forgettable, 2 feel like Hall of Famers, and 2 Sanchez and Flacco had a kind of peculiar ability to win big playoff road games early in their career. I have no idea how Mac Jones will do this weekend, but I've seen it before from the SEC. I had my doubts with both. But what separates Mac and Dak, and it usually isn't this, we ask our NFL quarterbacks to be unfairly mature at 23 years old. And both Mac and Dak bring that in bunches. Mac was always good at the podium this year. Dak, 4 or 5 years in, has never made a mistake at a podium. Not one time. He's as good as anybody, including Brady. So I have no idea if he's going to win, but I feel like I've seen this before. For the record, 0 degrees, not ideal weather. Usually the better quarterback in bad weather struggles. Josh Allen, Mac Jones, I suspect we have a potential upset this weekend.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's an interesting Joe Burrow stat. Joe Burrow hosts the Raiders. And I've said, I think I would probably, if I had a vote, vote Joe Burrow the most valuable player because I think he's so valuable to the franchise. It's not a well-run franchise. It's a cheaply owned franchise. We didn't know if Zach Taylor was going to get fired 2 years ago. Now, that's, to me, value. He's literally changed the trajectory of the entire franchise. Now, I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers, if he sat out, wouldn't hurt the team, but Green Bay has been run well since the 80s. I mean, when's the last time Green Bay wasn't well run? This organization was nonsense and chaos. He shows up, gets hurt because they can't protect him, and this year they win an excellent division. To me, he's the MVP of the league. Aaron's going to win it. Brady's going to take some votes away. I would vote Joe Burrow. He's cocky, but it's likable. He's got a chip on his shoulder, but it's likable. Aaron Rodgers has a chip on his shoulder. I don't think he's likable. Baker's got a chip on his shoulder. I don't think he's likable. Likable matters. It's easier to sell your narrative in the locker room to coaches when they like you. It's always easier to sell what you're trying to sell when people want to listen to you and people like you. I think that's a part of the problem with Aaron. He wears people out. Baker wears people out. It's harder to sell your ideas and your kind of worldview in moments, big picture, when people don't, you know, they don't love being around you. I think Joe Burrow's got that likable cockiness, and I don't know exactly how to explain it. Brady's got it the same way. He's confident but fun. But there's an interesting stat with Joe Burrow. He's played 6 games in his career that are what they call have-to-have-it games. He's not only 6-0, he has 27 TDs and no picks. So in the 6 biggest college or pro games, he has been virtually perfect. And it's not a shock because the feeling always was with Joe. He wasn't the biggest, the most athletic, didn't have the strongest arm, but there was a real it factor and a real cool factor, and he played big in big spots. So, his biggest 6 games, 27 TDs and no interceptions, and this would qualify as his 7th biggest game, hosting as a favorite a playoff game.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins Blazing Fire. Raiders at Bengals.
I'm going to take the Bengals -5.5. Matchup of the team with the most penalty yards in the league, the Raiders, and a matchup of the team with the fewest penalty yards in the league, the Bengals. I also worry that the Raiders' defense was on the field for 90 snaps, and then they lose a day with travel. And Joe Burrow this year, you can look at the numbers, has been absolutely unbelievable. Completion percentage, number 1 in the league. Passer rating, number 2 in the league. The Raiders are the first team in NFL history that end a season with 4 straight wins of 4 points or fewer. I kind of feel like the gig is up. They've also only scored 17 offensive touchdowns over the last 10 weeks. That's the fewest among all playoff teams. I think a worn-down defense gets exposed in the second half. Bengals win and cover 32-26.
Patriots at Bills.
Well, I'm going to take the points here with New England. Belichick gets Josh Allen for a 3rd time. New England has 24 rushing touchdowns, 2nd most in the league. It's 0 degrees. I don't think there's going to be a ton of points, and I like 4 with New England. The Bills, by the way, are 0-5 in games decided by 1 possession. I told you, they're Mike Tyson. They'll knock you out early or lose close. And Josh Allen against the Patriots has not been very good. 57% completion percentage. In fact, he's only completed 63 on the year. That's the 2nd lowest among all playoff quarterbacks, and that includes good weather games. I think it's ugly. I think it's low scoring. It's going to be low scoring, so I'm taking the 4. I'll take the Bills to win in a late field goal, but this is my strongest play of the weekend. I like New England plus the points. 28-27 Bills win.
Eagles at Buccaneers.
This is my 2nd strongest play of the weekend. I like the Eagles plus 8.5. They don't make mistakes, and Brady does. Philadelphia right now, I think yards, this is a fascinating one. If you look At the Eagles' offense, they average almost 3.5 yards a carry before contact. That leads the league. That means there's holes open. They open things up. And they have 16 giveaways this year. Third fewest among playoff teams. Whereas Brady has 15 giveaways this year. That's the most for him in 12 years. Tampa Bay is still banged up. Does not have a consistent run game. The weather could be windy. That hurts the more vertical passing team. I think Tampa wins here. But 8.5 against the team that consistently gets over 10 yards a carry. I think it's close. Tampa Bay 27, Philadelphia 24.
49ers at Cowboys.
Went back and forth. I got to go with my initial instinct. I'm taking San Francisco and the points and the upset win. Listen, the road teams won 10 of 14 wild card games over the last 3 years. It's the majority. And the offense for San Francisco leads the NFL. Huge stat. Yards per play, 6.1. 49ers offense, hottest it's been all year. Three of the last four games, 150 yards rushing plus. And oh, by the way, all you Jimmy Garoppolo haters, it's insane. Here are the numbers post-Thanksgiving for Jimmy Garoppolo. Since week 9, second in the league in completion percentage, first in passing yards per attempt, first in big passing plays. Since Thanksgiving, he's a top 5 clutch quarterback in the league, and the Cowboys are 1-5 when they're held under 100 rushing yards, and it's hard to get to 100 against the Niners' defense. I like the Niners to win. 28-27, take the points.
Cardinals at Rams.
This is my weakest bet of the weekend. I'll take the Rams -4. A couple of things worry me. Arizona's defense has not been good. 6 yards a play surrendered in their last 5 games. And the Rams, 10 of their 12 wins by 7 or more. Like Buffalo, they get it going. They get a lead. They rarely lose. Kyler Murray is 1-4 over his last 5 games, and he has struggled against this Rams personnel, regardless of who is the coordinator. Not only 1 win in his last 6, but 9 giveaways and a passer rating barely above 80. In this division, the Niners give the Rams fits, and the Rams tend to control Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. It's my weakest play of the week, but I like the Rams to win and cover 31-26. There you go. All of our odds provided by Fox Bet Sportsbook.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So let's bring in Eric Mangini. All right, the obvious question is, Bills-Patriots play 2-game split. Now you face a team for the third time. Now, I would think advantage Belichick. Belichick gets a third look at Josh Allen, who is talented but a little wild. You tell me, you faced teams when you were with New England a third time. Advantage Bill?
Well, Colin, I faced Bill a third time when I was the head coach of the Jets. We had the same situation. We split during the course of the season. They beat us at our place. We beat them at their place. And then we had to go a little different. We had to go to New England to play them. I'd say the other difference that situation is they actually changed out the field after we beat them during the regular season and went to turf. So that was a little different environment. But I'd say the main thing that he did, and he did really well, is we had done a lot to confuse Tom, to attack their rules, and they came out with a high-tempo, no-huddle offense that didn't allow us to do any of those things early in the game. Then if they hit a play, they came back and they hit exactly the same play again. So that first drive, they did actually create an advantage and ended up scoring. So there's going to be something like that that the Bills are going to have to deal with early in the game, and how well they deal with it is going to go a long way in terms of how well, you know, whether or not they're able to win.
So you have, in the last 4 years, there's been one kind of blowout in the wild card round. That was the Saints over the Bears last year. So underdogs do well. We're going to have upsets. We may have an overtime game. I think Philadelphia keeps it close with Tampa. What is your underdog to keep an eye on?
Look, you and I always disagree on on Big Ben, and I like Big Ben, and I love Big Ben in this situation where he's literally fighting to play another week. And when you look at the last time they played, the game couldn't start any worse than it did, where Kansas City goes down and scores, and then Pittsburgh tries a flea flicker, it gets intercepted, and the whole thing goes south pretty early on. I like the Steelers. I like the Steelers. I like where they are. I like their attitude. I like the fact that they're playing with no pressure. And you know, I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Mike Tomlin is one of the great underdog coaches in league. He is. You know, the knock on him is like, yeah, he's all about motivation. Well, that's really good when you're an underdog, because his teams come in, their offense is so unwatchable. But yet I've seen this happen probably five times this year. You think they're overwhelmed, and they play great, and they just have a great 3 hours. So,
yep. And you underestimate your opponent, which it's easy to do in this situation. Colts did it last week. Rams did it against us in New England in the Super Bowl. It happens, and it's it's a terrible way to end your season.
What concerns you about the Dallas Cowboys' favor to win at home this weekend?
A lot concerned me. I've watched them a ton throughout the course of the season, and it's the self-inflicted wounds. It's being last in the league in penalties. At one point, they were last in the league in drop passes, mental errors with the offensive line, missed throw, all those things, the time management issues, where they get in the way of themselves. And that, to me, is a problem. And then you also look at it, and how well are they going to protect if they turn this into a passing game? Are they going to do things to not let Nick Bosa ruin the game, or are they going to just count on their offensive line? And I don't know. When you look at Dak's record, where he's thrown 40 or more times when it's that situation, it's not very good. I think it's like 3-13. Hopefully they'll be balanced. Hopefully they'll get out of their own way. But those are my biggest concerns, and it's been a concern all season.
So Derek Carr, I said earlier, I don't know what award I would give him. If I was the league, I'd make one up, the Life Preserver Award, because he's like, this franchise feels like it's been like drowning for about, you know, 6-8 weeks. And he just keeps making these miraculous plays. And I've always liked Derek Carr way more than the average fan. I think way more than the media. I like him. I think there's something there. I would give him an extended contract. I'm a big believer in Derek. But I do worry about playing in a game of that magnitude with the Chargers. Your defense played almost 90 snaps. Now you got to go on the road and face a high-powered offense. And I feel like, all right, the gig is up a little, right? They can't keep doing this.
Well, what's been normal about their season? What has they lose their head coach in the way that they do? They have personal tragedy. They have four overtime wins. This is Derek Carr's first playoff game. There's nothing that's been normal about this season. So they're used to operating in this environment, and they built up a callus. And again, you look at their first game, and it's a one touchdown game going into the fourth quarter. I'm with you. I like Derek Carr a lot, and I like the Raiders story. And sometimes you got to be lucky, and sometimes the football gods shine on you, and hopefully for them, it'll continue the way it has.
Yeah. All right. So, what was your Super Bowl prediction? I think, didn't you have Packers Bills before the year?
I did. I had Buffalo Packers with Buffalo winning. And look, I still like Buffalo a lot, and I like Green Bay a lot. But to me, the Titans, it's hard to not appreciate what the Titans have done all season long, and I think that they have a resilience and a toughness and a quality to them that's going to be hard to deal with. And with potentially Derrick Henry coming back, it's hard to bet against them right now. And look, I love their head coach. He's one of the smartest guys that I've ever coached in my career. And I think they've got as good an opportunity, if not better, than anybody at this point.
All right, couple of coaching questions. Seven coaches out of work, all for kind of different reasons. Is there any of the coaching firings that just don't make any sense to you?
I'm never a big fan of firing people in their first year. I'm not a big fan of firing people in their second year. There's this idea of they want this turnaround right away. And I always say it's like asking you to cook a turkey, but they want you to cook it in the microwave. And it's just not realistic. And the, you know, you look at Brian Flores' situation. I know that you and I talked about whether they should move on with him when they're going through that down streak, but he sweeps the Patriots and
they
have a winning season. And there's a lot of things that you like about him. And yeah, is the environment tough? Yeah, it's tough. That's what you signed up for when you signed them. And is there going to be turbulence? Yeah, but if you want to be able to win on a consistent level or compete for a championship on a consistent level, it's hard to do. And look, you also need a good quarterback. And we don't know where Tua is. But I thought that was rough.
Now, of all the current openings in the NFL, is there one that you would look at and say, I could turn that around pretty quick?
There's a few that you like. Miami, if you like Tua, they've got a ton of cap room. That should be a good situation. And that they're coming off a winning record. You look at Jacksonville, if you like Trevor, that should be a great situation because I think they've got the most cap room to do something and obviously the highest draft pick. Minnesota's got real offensive talent and should be able to win there quickly, but how do you feel about Cousins? The Giants, if you want drafts, they've got two picks in the high. Typically, you know, historically, they've been a patient organization, not in recent history. And then if you're Josh McDaniels, Houston's a perfect place. Brian Daboll, Houston's a perfect place. You're fundamentally aligned with the GM.
Yeah. All right, so you're sticking your neck out there with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're the only man in America willing to go on TV.
I like Ben Roethlisberger. I like the storyline. I think the game, you know, started horribly, but doesn't really matter what happened last time. It is a little bit it doesn't fall in line with how competitive it could be this time.
Yeah. Good seeing you, Coach. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Love Dwayne Wade. Had him on the show a month ago. He was fantastic. Had a new book out. It's a beautiful book. He said something yesterday. He was talking about all-time greats. And Dwayne Wade said, quote, "The game continues to keep moving forward. We're going to continue to see things we've never seen before." That I agree with. "The eyes are going to get younger and younger. We're not going to be the ones having a conversation about the GOATs. Now it's going to be the younger, younger generation. And they're going to forget about Jordan like we forgot about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar." I totally disagree. I think Jordan is totally unique. First of all, Kareem, I grew up with Kareem. I never felt connected to Kareem. I kind of watched him from afar. He had a unique shot that nobody duplicated. He was academic and stoic. I didn't buy his shoes or his apparel. He is the most underrated player of all time. I know that sounds weird, but most people that are fans didn't watch him. You couldn't stop him. He was great defensively. He was great offensively. He's one of the smartest players in league history. But he was stoic. If Michael Jordan and Kareem were actors, MJ's Denzel. Kind of feel like that'd be fun to go out and have a drink with him. And Kareem would be Jeremy Irons, regal, academic. You would never bother him if you saw him in a hotel lobby. That's Kareem. Magic, in fact, did an amazing job, and this is a credit to Magic's personality. Magic made Kareem a little bit more likable. And Magic would go give him big hugs, and the big fella Kareem would be like, "What is this? This is odd." Even Magic's warmth with Kareem kind of felt like an odd fit. And I love Kareem. When I was a kid in my backyard, Kareem was who I copied. I did a hook as a little boy. That was Kareem. He was nothing like him. But we wore Michael's shoes. Other athletes wear Michael's gear. When John Madden died, that was what was so unique. How the richest broadcaster of his time connected with a plumber in Iowa, a school teacher in Denver, regular American citizens. Michael maybe didn't connect quite like that, but he was glamorous. He was cool. We wore his gear. He was never stoic. He was really emotional. He punched the teammate. He yelled at Rodman. He was incredibly visceral. Kareem rarely did, although he did once punch Kent Benson. I remember that. You can look it up on YouTube. But I think Jordan lasts forever. When you wear him, when you can feel him, when his moments, I mean, right now, if you closed your eyes and I said, think about Michael's five best moves, you'd go to the two-hand, you'd go to the Cleveland. If I said, Kareem, five biggest hook shots, well, they all kind of feel the same, right? Could be in Seattle, could be in Los Angeles, could have been, you know, in Dallas. And this is not a shot at Kareem. But as great as Brady is, Manning's more relatable. Peyton Manning eats Oreos. Tom's married to a supermodel and eats avocado ice cream. Peyton Manning, and I don't know him well, and you all think I'm a Brady fan, but if I saw Brady in a bar, I wouldn't walk up to him. I would Peyton. Just feels like he'd be, sit down and have a beer. It's not a knock at Brady. It's just Kareem feels academic and distant, and Tom feels bigger than anybody I know. My friends have attractive wives, no supermodels. But it's just different. And I think Michael's connectability and Peyton Manning's connectability and Brett Favre's connectability, the best players are often forgotten. Oscar Robertson, we never talk about. Karl Malone's the second leading scorer. We don't talk John Stockton or Karl Malone. Jordan's different. Peyton Manning's different. Brett Favre is different. They had different brands, but Hanes underwear, hot dogs, Oreos, Wrangler, that's connectability.